Radio Saudi.
Hey, cut up the station, it's about that time for Fila. Most likely he a small fry if he won't stamp by Beehive. It's one in one station only, they got the streets on fire. So please do not touch the dial, cause we finna go live, live, live.
What's happening, what's happening, what's happening? Of course you know it's your boy Beehive Radio Shout. As always, I got my podcast partner off in this thing, OG Gangsta Wicked, a.k.a. Big Galaxy. What's going on with it, my dog?
See, showing out all. You see, you talking about what I'm talking about.
We can't even get the damn interview started because you want to be
my
early.
Name. My name is Galaxy Wick. Not Big Galaxy, not Planetarium Galaxy, not Venus. Galaxy Wick.
Okay, see, you want to make it all about you.
That's right.
Okay, but we got
me.
Atlanta's favorite couple off in this thing right now as we speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got the favorite couple off in this thing.
Yes, sir.
Cutty Ross, see, what's good with it, fam?
What's good?
Man, feeling good, feeling great. Now, I got to ask y'all this, though, man, because y'all know we're working on this documentary with Andre Willis. We're talking about the Phoenix nightclub. Can y'all share any fond memories that y'all have of the Phoenix?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay, so, how many years has it been? Okay, so we won't get in no trouble. The Phoenix. Let's go back to the Phoenix. The famous Phoenix, Marietta Street. I mean, so, at that time, I was in a group called the Capers.
That's right.
And the Phoenix was a place where we used to rehearse, sneak in the club because we was young and they had no business being in there. But we was in there all the time.
Yeah.
Hate to snitch, but I'm snitching. But the craziest, the most, I would say, great things, I would say, is like some of everybody was always there.
Mm-hmm.
We would be rehearsing. You might look up because it was an up top part. You might see Andre 3000 up there leaning over.
Yeah.
Big Boy, them. Outkast wasn't out like that yet.
Yeah.
They were at the Phoenix trying to perform, trying to get on like all the rest of us.
Yeah.
So you would see groups, but as far as the Phoenix was concerned, it might be. Let me tell you one performance I do remember. They wasn't from Atlanta, but this was way back in the day. Daz FX. They had Daz FX.
You look like one of them.
Don't do them like that.
Yeah.
You look like one of them.
The best looking one that I
hold. I remember like from Redman, so many different people. Like we used to have to be like in the cut. And the one thing about me that we always talk about with the Capers is we'd be in the club chilling, having a good time, and I'd be the one nigga over there leaning on the speaker, knocked out sleep. What we finna do? Is we gonna get to perform or not?
Yeah.
hold up, come on, Rashida, get up. But it was just like so many great times. We used to rehearse there a lot, so we would see a lot of groups doing a sound check, us just trying to learn, you know, as a three-girl rap group at that time. Mm. Just, and back then, we were Cartoon Capers, actually. We hadn't even transcended into the Capers.
Mm.
We was Bugs, Taz, and Speedy.
Yeah.
The Cartoon Capers at the very, very beginning of, you know, just trying to figure it out as like a little group. You know what I'm saying? Loving to do music, loving to perform, because Kia and Kiki, my group members, they used to dance. And like the little dance groups, because they went to Maze.
Okay,
And I went to North Clay.
I went to Maze.
Okay, you went to
Maze.
I was a Southsider.
Come on,
Maze had all the pretty women. I don't know. I don't know about no players.
That was Doug High.
Yeah, that was.
But yeah, man, that was the days. It was the beginning of, you know, and honestly, it was the beginning of hip hop Atlanta.
Mm.
You know, Outkast had not come out.
Yeah.
A lot who at that time
Kilo. What Kilo?
Silk Times Level, maybe.
Yeah.
Crisscross.
It was mixtapes. It was like
Mixtapes from Magic Mike.
Yeah.
like stuff like that.
Y'all wasn't was even like, my group at that
no,
point.
We weren't even signed to we weren't signed to D-Lo, to Legacy yet.
Yeah.
We were really just getting started. Back then, we was managed by Rob right. McDowell, BME.
Yeah.
BME, which is Lil Jon, Cersei, Rob, Vince, yeah. big shout out to them. And of course, one of the girls in the group, Kia, her brother is Vince.
Mm-hmm.
So,
facts.
You know.
Yeah.
We used to ride in Rob on broke down Toyota turf sale with no window. It'd be cold as hell. We'd be sitting in, going to warn the car, Rob. We in, at the Phoenix late. Everybody gone late night. Warn the car, Rob, so we could be warm while we riding. Because you want to sit on the window side. Because if you sit on the side of the window, the air blow on the other side. When we was pushing it in that turf sale with no window. But nah, that was back in the day. It was
yeah,
that,
okay. That, yeah, Extra Large Records okay. getting behind you.
Okay. So when we were presented, Extra Large had kind of, you know, came to us and was like, hey, we have a record company, and we interested in signing, you know, the group, the Capers. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong, I think Eric Johnston was talking to some of the BME, and that's how we kind of, I think, pulled everything together because we were managed by Rob. So it was like they whole crew, really, you know. And I think they had the conversations and all that type of stuff. And then over time, we ended up signing a deal with Extra Large Records, which what we knew was Eric. And then after a little bit of time, Mike Dobson. Came into play and was kind of working with us. And actually, back then, this was when you had to, like, do artist development and rehearse and shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, we was just constantly rehearsing, trying to figure out, you know, a sound, trying to get with different, like, producers and stuff. And it's so funny because me and Kurt was riding down the street the other day and I seen a poster of Nandi, a.k.a. Inga Willis. She's running for state representative.
Yeah.
But Nandi... just people that we remember, you know, from back in the day. We were working with Deanna, who used to be with TLC in different groups. So they, you know, Extra Large had, you know, came in and was trying to get, like, a structure, which is hard when you got three females.
Yeah.
It's a headache. We were kind of all over the place just trying to figure it out. But Extra Large definitely, you know, put the deal on the table and kind of jump-started, you know, what we were trying to do as a group. And we worked with them for a couple of years, learned a lot, worked with some different producers and stuff, learned things as a group as far as, like, you know, performing together and doing different things like that. And then, honestly speaking, I don't even remember what the hell happened. it was a lot going on back in them days.
Yeah.
But when we dismantled from Extra Large is then when we ended up signing with Kirk and Legacy Records, D-Lo Entertainment.
I can deal.
Wow. I mean, look, I don't know what they was doing. I'm going to be honest. Robbing them just slipped my ass in. I was the money guy.
Period.
It was the money guy. Yeah. The money guy.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
24 years of marriage, family. Talk to me, man. I mean, what's the secret?
Let me let you elaborate on that.
No, you know what? We can't even. I can't even jump into that part yet. Because when I met, we never even. So signing. I mean, when I met them, they were a group. They were the Cartoon Capers, and they were talking about music at that point in time. I was a little dude in the street running around, you know, making my way and making my noise and hanging with people. You know, I was hanging at that time. I was hanging with JD, and he was just starting. I don't even think he came. Well, wait. Did he have Crisscross?
Well,
Silktime Leather, I think he had.
Silktime Leather.
He used to be up and down Old National at this little beauty shop. And he was talking about the music, and I was a little dude from New York with the little New York cars, and everybody was on the Dayton's and the old school.
The Inkies and the Momo's.
Yeah, he was just doing all these foreign cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just getting around, and I had, like, family over here, over off of Bankhead and Bolton Road and Cascade, and I'm just mixing up everything, learning Decatur, so I'm everywhere. And then one day I was talking to some of my friends. I didn't even know Rashida yet. I knew
Kia
and Kiki. And we were just talking about something in general, like, man, you need to get into the label thing. You need to start doing it. Because I was already hanging with everybody. But I'm like, boy, in my mind, I don't know nothing about music.
Yeah.
I grew up in it. I'm from New York. I grew up in the Bronx, seeing all the DJs in the park. But I'm not, the label part at that point wasn't like something I was trying to do. And as I was around it for a little while, you know what I noticed? I remember the day that made me say, you know what, I gotta change this shit. I would always keep all my cars in a storage, like, mm-hmm. you know, because you're trying to be low key. That's what D-Lo is. D-Lo was like under the radar low, but I'm doing the fuck I need to do. Yeah. That's what mine was about. So we was going out one day, and it was like, you know, the stores are closed at 9, and I have to go get one of my cars. And I noticed, but then I had to take Jermaine to go get one of his cars, but we went to his house. And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. So he could just keep his shit in his house, drive it like he want to, show free. Off and be yeah. like, he wanted the light, and we was like ducking from the cameras and the pictures that we were trying to be, don't put me in that shit.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and was like, damn, but they really living a better life than us, because we're hiding, hustling, and they are pushing themselves to the forefront.
Yeah.
And that's what made me say, you know what, I'm going to begin to think about getting a label, because I need to get my, because it was all about working, making the money to pay your bills and take care of your family.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to get on this side of the table, because then I can be doing what I want to do and don't have to hide shit.
Exactly.
That was my mindset at that point. And you young, you know, I'm young. I'm 20 something year, 20 maybe 20 yeah. years old. And I'm just looking and we talking, and I was like, oh, I'm about to start my label. And it took a lot at that time to do the label, because you had to go get your, you know, you had to search the name, make sure it was available.
No, you talking about like the business license and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, you know what, this
oh,
like
that
now.
Shit like
yeah.
go online.
You know, you had to go get the lawyer to do the yeah. paperwork and incorporate your joint and do all the, get the book with the
signature
signs
from
the certificates.
The, yeah,
and
it was crazy.
The stock option. It was like a process. So I remember
the
in 94,
yeah,
I was like, I got my company solidified in 94. And I was like, all right, I got my corporation. We could go. I could sign my first group. Let's go. I'm ready, y'all. And then when I say I jumped in it, not knowing, I'm talking about just jumping in, buying everything, billboards, magazines, thinking, you just thinking this, you just come in and you take over. And it's like, no, I'm going to show your ass, you ain't doing nothing in this city unless you, I learned a lot. Yo, they used to do me so dirty. I was like, you know, it was really a lot harder than what I thought, because I just was, like when they used to talk about rapping, like Kia, and Kiki, they were more vocal. You were more, like, you were vocal. Kiki was the most vocal. Mm-hmm. Like, just always tell me everything. Like, well, we want to be doing this, and we need to do this. And I just, and then I started thinking, like, man, but y'all three girls, y'all trying to do all of that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was like, I got to get a team and structure. So I say, y'all need to stay with the people y'all with, and I need to help them
yeah.
because y'all already got some type of format that y'all was working on, and that's how. And see, I didn't know how they were structured. I just right. knew it was definitely Eric was around, and I heard Dre name a lot as well. It was Extra Large. It yep. was certain things. So I was really trying to collaborate in with the group and take it, like, try to come in and take it further. And that's yeah. how we kind of met. So Rob stayed managing him and stuff, and we stayed on, just kept grinding and grinding and grinding. And, you know, I saw, I mean, I can remember everything. I just know we were some, you know what it was? I was some getting money ass type of dude, and they was like grinding, don't have it. And I'm like, but why can't we just go do it like this and go get some, you know, like, why can't we go get a nice spot and put the studio? And they was like, nah, we're going to stay right here. We're going to stay. It was in the basement. You know, it was in the little basement in the yeah. house, I guess. It was Kia's mom house, right? So they didn't have to really pay rent or nothing and like that. But it was more, I think for them, it meant more, because you would see Bone Crusher. It was yeah. the Lyrical Everybody. Giants.
At that time, Jim Crow.
Yeah.
No,
it wasn't
oh
Jim
no, they
Crow.
Wasn't even Jim Crow then. They was something else.
It was Polo and Duke. What was the name of that group?
The dude, the one nigga with the light eyes. I cannot remember the group.
That was
before
they
had a
group.
Jim Crow.
Little John was there. Cersei, Raw. It was like that team of people were there. Like, they were like there all the time rehearsing yeah. and doing stuff. And you know,
Rob was trying to get us together, trying to control three females.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
What was that tipping point when stuff started to shake and y'all started to say, okay, this money was well invested, this time and grind was well invested?
That was like 10 years later.
Damn. Oh, yeah.
That was
it took a long. We always say, if somebody would have told us at the beginning, it would have taken, you know, 10 or 15 years for you to
stopped.
Really break through. And then we would have did the shit. You know what I'm saying? We would have got a job.
fought every day. It's like every day you got up, you pushed to get further. You was trying to learn. As long as it was always given, I'm the type, if it's given, I'm always going to stick with it. If I'm seeing something progress over time, I'll continue to stick with it. And I watched them go from, you know, it was like Speedy, Taz, and Buzz. And there was the cartoon capers. And I was thinking one time they was doing something, and I don't know if it was Dallas. One of them was like, yo, it was something about y'all should just be the capers. Like, drop the cartoon. Like, I think because everything was animated. You know, like, yeah, everybody was so raw. It was so
Busta Rhyme animated back in the day. Like, Atlanta hadn't had a sound yet.
It was amazing.
So we were a group of girls who was in the city trying to emerge in hip hop and trying to figure out our sound. But the one thing that we knew that was a undone is that we love music.
Yeah.
Like, we just love performing. We love doing music, you know, because we were figuring out how to record, figuring out how to stack vocals, figuring out how to do, you know, so that was all that beginning process. And then, shit.
That was a journey.
So then you go solo though.
So what was it
that made that was after the cape? Yeah, '94 was the getting into the music. I don't think the first album we released was The Capers, and that was in 98. And by then, I mean, you got to think about the growth over those four years. They're now grown. They got their license, they driving cars, they got their separate boyfriends, and dudes over here, one, you know, it was a lot going on, and then we had to begin to learn the street females coming on cycles and G-Mags. It was really tough.
She wanna be with her nigga today.
It was tough.
I wanna be over here today.
And it took friends. Like, we were really good friends, and, you know, like, all of us were friends, and it was like, damn, it started turning into work. You know, because it was like everybody is, let's say Freaknik is going on. Everybody want to go to Freaknik.
Right.
Yo, y'all got a deadline. Right. Y'all got to get the hell in the studio.
That little line was hard to break because we were friends, but we needed to focus on work, you know. Yeah. And then over time, honestly speaking, over time, I would say probably around like 99, because the album came out in 98, probably about a year.
98. What you can say over time,
over about that a year span is kind of like when we kind of started going our separate ways. Like,
98 was the Capers came out. 98 October, you know, we was doing a lot. I mean, before the come out, they was on all the magazines. We was flying to LA, staying out there for 3 months, doing like the Urban Mix show and putting them in all the venues, just doing that, getting all the magazines.
And then we did all that BET stuff.
BET, Comic View, Soundstage.
Comic View. On the radar with MTV,
Rap City. So we were just trying to get them the buzz.
The name out there, yep.
And everybody, at that point in time, I think they was like, oh, you like the new Master P. And I'm like, I ain't nowhere near Master P. I ain't sold no records yet. I ain't got no millions of dollars.
This was before Master P. Master P wasn't the
capers. No. But
you had already
but Joe Clear claimed
we had our own shit.
It was like a compound. He was like, yeah, you got the studio, the dish, the workout, the performance. But I started thinking, like, well, everything they need, I need it in one place.
That's right.
Because I don't want to be going here, going to, what's the shit up the block?
Crossover
to pay for this bill. Then they needed they wasn't writing at that point in time. No. Then they needed a room to write in. And then it was dudes doing beats. And so I went and bought everything they need. So when you come, you just need to bring your disc, and I got everything in that room.
Exactly.
And I started figuring out, because when you send them places, they were coming back different. You know, they was always coming back with, like, I want to do this, and, well, I want to rap first, and I want to do this. And it was like, it was just a bunch of bullshit, to be honest with you, and a lot of spending money. But I think at that point, we was in L.A., we was doing stuff with Dog Pound and hanging around. They was hanging around Snoop and everything. And, you know, I was watching the interview recently. I talk about this too. I did not know. I think I was scared to ask him at the point in time when Snoop came to the studio and just fired up the weed and shit. We all in it. I didn't know that meant I'm coming to rap on the song. Teach us that shit.
No, and this was Snoop Doggy Dogg style.
We didn't know that though. We
in Atlanta in his car. Right.
Yeah.
All of us in the group trying to smoke as much weed so when the door opened, it all go out the car like a Snoop video. That's how goddamn corny we put.
Yeah. To get up in LA, like that shit you seen in the
videos. We was smoking chronic. We was smoking hydroponic. Out the water outside and for real. I was like, yo.
So those was fun times.
We had some fun times.
The Capers came out. Jermaine did the first single.
Yep.
And that, me being from New York, the sound appeared to me to be a little better at the time. I'm not knowing Atlanta, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in Atlanta, but I'm not knowing music. I'm thinking worldwide. I'm like, we got to be a little bigger than Atlanta, thinking that way. And when I came out with the first record, Just For You, it had Brad on it. I mean, I remember my video was like 125,000 because it was the big shit you had to, mm-hmm. you know. And then Brad wanted 40,000 to be on the beat, and the makeup artist wanted this, and they had to be styled. I mean, I was spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot. And I mean, and at that point, even though me and BME and all of us, we cool and everything, Kia being the sister of Vince, the lawyer, the album just dropped. They already coming back to me. They want to advance. They want what's the shit that the cycles to go up? Mm-hmm. So they wanted more money. They wanted this, that, and the other. And I'm
hadn't
not
even really did
shit. Just started getting a little buzz.
They just started getting a little buzz.
And they
buzz.
Hit my ass for some more money. My dumb ass gave it to them, you know. And we put out one single. Shot the video to that joint.
Yep.
We put out two. We shot Don't Stop First with Ludacris and everybody. Yep. And then we came with Just For You.
Just For You, yep.
And by that time, we were thinking about going into the second album, and it was just starting to really bubble, and it was some attitudes becoming to get into play. Like, the friends of the group started feeling left out.
Mm.
Like, you ain't taking us with you no more, because this shit is getting expensive.
Yeah.
You know, we stand in L.A. 3 months.
But wait, we got to tell this part. We always say, you know, when we used to go to, you know, do shows and do all, it might be 25 cars.
Crew
of niggas.
Going to,
everybody
know.
With us. Friends, extra friends, hype niggas, everything. After we finished with the Capers, went solo, still had a crew with us.
Yeah.
But after time, we looked up, boom, 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 just me and Kurt.
Yeah.
Riding down that motherfucking highway.
Yeah.
Going and doing these shows, you know, just grinding.
That
just
started out amazing. When that money was there, I mean, and I remember spending, I spent a lot, man. Easily $1-5 to $2 million, which would be 3 to 4 now.
Yeah, that was in the
90s. I was spending a lot. I had nothing to do with it. I was really excited over, you know, getting into the music.
Yeah.
And actually, it was school. You know, it was school for me because I learned what you couldn't have taught me. So I think at that point, the Capers, I was like, I'm not giving y'all that much money to go into the next album.
Well, Kia wanted more money because she had this.
By that time, we had this Shorty Swing My Way. But it wasn't like, the thing about Shorty Swing My Way, well, Vince, the lawyer, wanted us to give Kia more money because she had this Shorty Swing My Way, which for us, it was great to have Swing My Way, but did we think it was going to go platinum? No.
Yeah.
It was actually one of them records when they was like, one of y'all got to do this
one
record.
One of y'all do this. And
we all listened
like,
to it.
All of us was like, what?
I don't know who's going to do it. Goes to show you, you know, never judge.
You don't know.
You never know.
Yep. And the structure wasn't even soundly set, like structured right. So the money that was received was, I mean, you could fit it between here. It was nothing.
Right.
Even though the record was gold, then it went platinum, and you know. So we learned a big valuable lesson at that point in time, but at the same time, you had her being Swing My Way, KP, and then you had the Capers, and then you had that, well, which one do I do? So then they had came to me and was like, well, can we do a, we were somehow doing like a joint venture situation where we did the KP and Envy album and featured the Capers on it and everything. So I remember going to Cashmere and Cohen and we down there talking. And at this point in time, keep in mind, I'm a street business guy at the time. I only know business.
Yeah.
And my deals to the Capers was like 20 points at that time. And I think groups was getting like 8.
Yeah.
I had gave them 20. So when they came to me with like, we're going to give you like 1 point on the album. I'm like, you want to give me what?
I don't know.
Nigga's
like,
you need my artist to do what? And I'm going to get what? And I'm like, so I was like, I tell you what, we could do a 50-50.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? If it's 3 of y'all and 1 of me, we still can all split equally. I'm not, so that really was giving y'all a 75 and me a 25
because
we were split equally. And I think the money at the time they was giving up was like $350,000 for an album. You know, 300, I mean, 2 videos cost me $350. That meant nothing to me. Like,
yeah.
The language meant nothing. Like, I'm like, I don't really care about what it costs what you said cost the shoot. I spent more than that on X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
At that time, we went into New Talker, and right after that, I said, you know what? We in the South. I'm listening to the sound. Because I came to Atlanta in 88.
Okay.
I'm like, this L.A., New York shit, no disrespect to none of it, it's not Atlanta. And when we was doing it, I was telling Rashida, if you're going to do music,
because
one.
Well, let me say this. Yeah. Because it had got to a point to where everything had kind of went sour with the group. You know, everything had went kind of sour. I was sad. And the reason why I didn't.
I was hurt.
He was hurt. I was sad, of course, because there was, that was like my sisters, you know?
Yeah.
We were like a family.
Yeah, I was hurt.
And when
we. Because money came into play.
And when that happened, and we was just like, well, you know, such and such didn't want to move forward. And I went to Kirk and I said, hey, listen, I know the Capers is looking like it might not happen. But I want to continue to move forward. Like, I want to keep doing this shit.
Yeah.
And that nigga turned around and looked at me. He said, listen, if you going to do this music shit, you got to be serious. You got to be in this studio. And the number one thing is, you got to learn how to write your own fucking raps.
I'm not paying nobody.
And when he told me that, because keep in mind, every single song we did, whether it was one writer or two writers, all them niggas had to be paid. You know, and then he always
had
that.
To learn the verse.
Yeah, then we had to learn the verse. And then he always had, like, a futuristic mindset. Even back then, he would be like, because if you're not writing that publishing, you know, you're not getting what you need to be getting. And that's the money that's going to raise, that's going to, you know, keep you paid and raise your kids and kids like that.
Yeah.
So when he said that to me, I was thinking to myself, oh, shit, okay, I got to learn how to write. I immediately, like, started just listening to beats and just learning and trying to figure out, you know, who I was or what I was trying to do. And it was still a journey.
Yeah,
but it was easy at that point.
No, it was. You say that.
It was.
No, because what I'll say is, like, even with the first Dirty South Rashida album,
let me tell you what I learned fast.
Talk
it was
me.
1999, December. The first record Rashida cut after this long speech was Do It.
Yeah.
Immediately. I took that shit to the radio station. It was like around 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, they had that shit where you could call in with Marsha Meadows. What was it called?
Eminem.
And they request the song and she play it.
Yeah.
So we would do that every night for like about 2 weeks. All of a sudden, it went from Eminem show to Chris Love
and Poon Day
to the 6 to 10 because it started getting a lot of requests.
Ladies,
and about 2 weeks later, it went in rotation by itself. And now, you know, I'm sitting here looking. Now, keep in mind, all these years don't went by and this motherfucking 99 going into 2000. And I'm sitting here saying, I did all of that shit. And all I had to do was just change the sound.
Yeah.
Ah.
The Do It went straight to number one in Atlanta. Like, we went straight to number one. Independent record.
Yeah.
At that time, I mean, everybody was calling the phone. Motown and Jive and Atlantic. And it was everybody. It was everybody. And my dumb ass made another mistake. This is the street side of me because I wanted a joint venture.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want that deal where you give me some points. I want half and you get half.
Exactly. Right?
So Universal Motown was the first person. Kadar was like, I'll do a 50-50 with you.
Shout out to Kadar. Yeah, good so looking.
He did a 50-50. He gave me back some of my money. He gave me like $500,000 back. To kind of be like a leverage partner.
Yeah.
Not money that I had to spend on her album. Was my money, something back, just to say.
Because we had gotten
gesture.
The record so far.
Yeah.
And I was
the record
like
was already
all over the South.
We were selling about 30,000 units a week. It was like Mike, the little dude,
Mike
SMD.
Yep.
So,
Mike Walker.
Yeah, so we had got over 100,000 units, and we were trying to pull the record back because his contract was it had to sell 100 with him. After that, you could take it.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to stay with him till we hit the 100.
Yeah.
It wasn't but like
a
couple of weeks into it. Shit sold fast. It happened fast. And then we wound up getting on the Cash Money tour, the Rough Ride of Cash Money.
Yeah.
We just started getting lucky. It was just like luck. And after that, we did the deal and I think we did like a bigger record, like Jazzy Faye or something.
Off the chain.
And then we did some with 112.
Yeah.
Again, trying to cross back into that crossover thing.
Well, not even just that, but and we was just having this conversation. Let me tell you. No, let me tell you why. Because back at that time, when it came to female artists, you either you was super nasty or you was like a gangster.
Yeah.
You know, there was like, it was a weird space.
Yeah.
And
it just got over weird.
Yeah, it is. And the crazy thing was, every single time we got with a label, they always wanted to do some type of crossover record.
Didn't
like,
push.
Hey, we want to put out a crossover record.
Yeah,
and we used to always be like, but you not in Atlanta. Atlanta is emerging, and this is what people want to hear.
Yeah.
This is what, you know, they not down here in the streets like how they be now.
Yeah.
But they didn't understand it, and we was trying to tell them, like, yo, Do It was big because Do It was a record. Atlanta ghetto record.
Come
you know?
On.
Everybody streaming the vocals back line for line, word for word. It's just like,
I mean, like,
that shit like, really like a dream come true because you like, wow, you seeing this shit happen.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a great moment for me.
No, I ain't gonna never forget y'all.
Moment.
Phillips Arena. This was probably 2000, Cash Money Rough Rider Tour in Atlanta.
2002.
This was back when Camouflage and Miracle,
yeah,
Pastor Troy, everybody was out, right? So I had, we was with Motown. I think Shantae was with us. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Shantae, too. They was like, hey, you're going to open up for the Cash Money Rough Rider concert. I said, shit. You talking about me? By myself? And they was like, yeah, we have it locked down. And I was like, oh, my God. All I know is we get to Phillips Arena. Now it's State Farm for y'all.
Yeah.
We get there. We go inside. Me and Kirk walking behind. You know, we're going backstage. And all I remember is Kirk was standing on the stage. And I'm standing back there, pacing forwards, backwards, forwards, backwards. I was so fucking nervous, right? So there was no introduction. This was some raw ass nigga get it how you live type situation, right?
The curtain was closed.
Listen, the curtain was closed and everything.
And
the Phillips Arena, y'all, it was fucking packed. All of a sudden, that shit, the fucking curtain just opened and all I saw, it was just a bright ass light shining on me. I couldn't see shit.
Right.
Not realizing the whole arena was packed, sold to capacity.
Right.
That motherfucking beat was like, boom, doom, doom. Everybody starts screaming.
This one, do it.
Do it. Yo.
It was like the loudest shit ever.
Oh, shit. Soon as you felt that, nigga, adrenaline had me and it was over with.
Was
I
over.
Went out there and started rapping. Nigga, then Troy came out there talking about,
stick
it. It was so lit.
Yeah,
they asked us to do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Did the song twice.
Yeah, I mean, and we actually got to run and do tours and stuff. But that record probably kept us out for, maybe 10 years.
My God.
That one record probably made us a couple of $1 million. One record at that time. She was the only female on all the club dates for years.
And just imagine as a female how hard that is.
And
especially for Atlanta hip hop. But not only that, just, you know, really just trying to gain respect for real in the game.
Yeah.
Really wanting to, you know, be taken seriously as a woman. A female who didn't come from a clique. I wasn't with DTP. I wasn't with, you know, Lil' Kim and Biggie.
Yeah.
And everybody else. Me and X had, you know, No Limit. Like, everybody had
a
connections.
Clique, a group. Yeah.
Except for me and Kaya. Yep. And that
it was my neck, my back. It was the only time they had ever seen records break out with a
for
solo.
For females.
Right.
And you wasn't affiliated with no niggas.
Yeah.
You know?
My God.
And it was really a great time. And music is changing, and you got to figure out how to beat it. And Kai's My Neck, My Back is a good example because it lets you know that, wait a minute, these girls want to hear some nasty shit. But cleverly, because being in Atlanta at radio at that time, you had Jerry Smoke and B, and who was the program?
Jerry Smoke and B.
Somebody was at V. They left. They was real strict, though.
Oh, they was. I can't even remember. Before Reggie.
Real strict.
Reggie.
It was like a whole nother dynamic.
It was a whole nother
time.
I can't even
I think
think
we were emerging into record. Like, we used to see certain things happen from, like, Off the Chain. It was and Get It On. But I think the next time we really felt something that was amazing was My Bubblegum.
Time out. No shade. Motherfucker, bend
your toes.
Over.
Touch
bend
your toes.
Up. They want to see me bend over.
Touch your toes.
That
happened first. Touch
that
your toes.
First, but they hate it
but
on
but me. But I'm going to show you with that. Okay. Touch your toes is going, right?
Yeah.
And I say My Bubblegum because I stopped Touch Your Toes myself, pulled it out, and put My Bubblegum in. That was dumb, too. I fucked that up. But
it'd have been too
The program director was giving me hell on, you want to see me bend over and touch your toes, but they talking all this other nasty shit and shoot and kill and murder. Coke. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with bend over?
Right. Yeah.
So we had to change it to get lower. And to me, get lower.
It didn't feel the same. Yeah. It needed to give.
They didn't give, but wait a minute, am I wrong? I think vibrate happened first.
Did vibrate happen first?
Some happened first.
No, because bend over, touch your toes happened before we got with Chandra.
Okay.
And did vibrate.
So bend over was like the 400-500 spin record. And then my bubblegum, I dropped that in there. And when I dropped my, they felt the same because it was the style that Rashida was coming with. The style that everybody, well, K. Michelle came with this joke, Rashida rap like Shirley. The rest of the piece of Shirley Love, which is a great artist.
Yeah.
But that was the beginning of that flow and that style.
I started the slow flow, dragging the words and just playing in the studio because at that time, like, Kurt was like, man, you know, you got to figure out who you are
something
as an
different.
Artist. We also have to, you know, give them something different and make sure that Rashida is developing who Rashida is. Mm. So we kind of just started going in the studio and just playing with shit.
Mm.
And that's how we ended up coming with, man, them boys in the club always looking for a blockhead. Y'all just say, give it up,
nonstop.
And we just started playing with it and Bubblegum and all of those songs. And then it started going from there. Then we came with Vibrate.
Bubblegum, but my Bubblegum, that is a historical record for us too, because Mall Cop, came out. Sony, they came and gave us a big old check to license the song. It was like number one on, at that time, MySpace.
I had all the girls' page.
And they came and gave us like $85,000 for to do the record, and then I'm the label, so the label get the same thing, so we got it twice.
Yep. Yeah.
So then it's an independent record, and the ringtones is now out. So now
$1.29.
We got 99 cents.
Yes, we got.
We got a dollar. And they kept the 30 cent, whatever they kept, 30 cents. So we would get 99 cents, but we was getting like a month, maybe 150,000, 200,000 a month, every month. So now this is when Motown is trying to do the deal. And they trying to tell me I can't sell the single no more once I do the deal. And I'm like, but how is that going to add up to
this deal?
Right. Like, that's why it's a joint venture. Because we giving you this as a, this, you ain't even got to recoup this 500. We giving it to you as good faith, good effort. This is just, so I'm like, okay. So we still could sell the singles that we got, though, because we still had some singles that we had went and got from Mike Walker. Like, give me all my shit. Here go yo, whatever you got, because you owe me a check. So deduct and give us all the rest of the boxes, right?
Yeah.
So he gave us the boxes and the check. And we running around selling them shits at all
the
clubs.
Out the trunk, nigga.
Then I had added posters to it, calendars. And I'm, like, promoting, like, setting up shops, selling shit at every club. It felt good coming from hustling just to see the money touching. I don't know what it was, but it was a great moment to continue. And we get my bubblegum going, and it just fucking goes bananas again. And it's number one 3 weeks in a row in the movie, and the ringtones is just going stupid. And we do the deal with them. And every time we do a deal with one of them fucking labels,
they fuck that shit.
It always seemed like they can't understand the music. And, you know, to lose that record at that point in time, I mean, we eat off it to this day. Don't get me wrong. We own it. We own it, you know. So it's just still like you can't, you stop putting your faith in those companies. And that's when I decided at that point D-Lo remained independent.
Mm.
Maybe I would take distribution, like I did an EMI distribution with my bubblegum, but I would never do what they own my masters no more.
Yeah. Mm.
And we wound up getting into a situation like we own 5 Rashida albums. Mm. I mean, we got 2 albums that we don't own. Motown having one, and Tommy Boy won't release one of them, and they're not even a major.
Mm.
But I don't push no records on the Tommy Boy one.
Yeah.
You know, because anything we push, like right now, like the Capers. I'm just making an example to show people. The Capers, we took a record ride with me. We just using it underneath whatever we doing on Instagram.
Yeah.
But we immediately put 4 million plays on it in a week.
And everybody's like, what's that song?
What's that?
Dang, I remember the capers.
So now they start to scream.
So now they start to scream.
So now the capers
start. So we can look at it and be like, oh, shit.
Now that album's starting to jump up and have the stars by it. But so what I'm learning is even having that old music means a lot because you get to dictate where it's at. The bad part that we just realized on the capers was it was a lot of different writers.
And a lot of fucking samples.
A lot of samples, a lot of writers. Damn. So it's not as good as the music now that we can, because it's like, damn, you got to go back and get this for them. And they want to use this, you got to go back. Because I was going to put out a caper, like they got like 7 or 8 joints that should have came out. Mm. I was like, we got to put this out.
Yeah.
We got to put it out. So, you know, we having fun now. You know, we literally got a record now, old as fuck, 10 years
old.
Marry
Me, maybe.
Platinum.
10, 11 years old.
Double platinum at this point.
Yeah.
Double platinum stream. It take 1 billion streams to go platinum. Y'all knew that, right?
Yeah.
It take a whole fucking 1 billion streams.
Shit, we got about
but
3.
We're a little over 3 billion streams in YouTube alone.
Ooh.
Plus, we got TikTok where it went viral. It's been viral for fucking 4 or 5 years at this point.
Yeah.
But those checks are freaking amazing. Yes. Like, when I tell you amazing, like, just, it just goes to show you your work does pay off.
Exactly.
You know? It does pay off.
And a lot of times, especially in this game, it's not immediate. You know, there's artists that I know who have had immediate success, but never was able to fill that void from that immediate success.
Yeah.
Like, it was never a long stemming career.
Yeah.
And I had to thank God to be like, man, I'm glad that. You know, I just count everything as a blessing. All the bumps, all the hard times, all the doors closed, all the times. Nah, you need to change this. You don't need to do that. All that is nothing but a blessing because I wouldn't want to have it any other way.
Yeah.
Now, I can do music when I feel like it, you know, or when I want to have fun. Or, you know, but we're able to wake up, look at numbers, and know that us and our children and our kids and all that will be able to eat off of that hard work and all them sacrifices through them years and the decisions that he made.
I say this all the time. You know? If they don't sell it.
Do y'all think the kids will sell it?
We putting a clause.
I mean, listen, let me tell you.
It's a clause.
It's very easy to slip and fall because guess what? You got to think, how many people had $1 million?
Yeah.
We all know this shit ain't nothing now, but it still sounds good. So, I mean, my bubblegum was $1 million offered 6 or 7 times.
Yeah.
But I was happy getting 35,000, even when it was slow out, 35, 25, 22,000 a month. I'd say I'd rather have a check forever.
Exactly.
So we kept it, and I explained to them now how important it is because my bubblegum is in like United States of Terror,
so many shows,
CSI Miami, Robin B. I mean, we probably got at least 50
and Vibrators on probably
placements.
Even more than that.
Yeah, Vibrators. When the PSP came out, the only hip hop song on the disc, it was the only rap song on there. It shipped to me in the first week from Sony. Again, it was a Sony movie. Sony took it and put it on the PSP. You know, we kept 10%.
Yeah.
Because Rashida wrote her part and then they put Petey Pablo on it. But 10% was by my other group who don't want to sell publishing, which is really
me.
Yo.
My other group is me. They don't want to sell their publishing. So we wound up keeping 10%, right. 5 and 5, but we had to act like somebody else owned it.
Yeah.
Like, so what's up now? You know, but.
Yeah.
Because she recouped her publishing deal finally. That shit took forever.
Never do that shit again.
Yeah, never took $1 million on a... Well, at that point, $1 million to her sounded great. I didn't take one. I didn't take one.
Can y'all break that down for folks that's trying to get into the game, the publishing deal?
That
$1 million? Because it sounds good.
It's well, it is, but you only get to recoup on your portion. So if there's $100... Well, let's use a dollar. If it's a dollar made, you only get to recoup... If you're getting 6 cents on a dollar, you only get to recoup that 6 cents. So that dollar mean nothing. You only got six cent credit. So now you just need to keep doing that over and over for years and years and years and years. And if you take some more money when you put out another single, because they will advance
they'll
you
keep
more.
Advancing you to keep
you know, hey, we've been in this
keep
deal for dead. Such and such. You ready to renew? You still owe us this, but we'll go ahead and lay on top of it. They really already got all the money, but they just keep giving you the money. And I was telling after this publishing deal she did, well, Universal Music Group, they do good because they track it and you get to get shit from everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But because now you don't need them because there's so many companies
that
do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you needed somebody to collect your money. So when Sound, what's it called? Sound Exchange came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just remember it was Christmas.
So somebody have got hit us in the email and was like, hey.
You got a lot of money sitting there.
Actually, you know what? It ended up being Twitter was popping.
Something was happening. Popping. Yeah, they was looking for
somebody
us.
Somebody was hitting us on Twitter like, hey, y'all got money over here. I work for this company. Y'all got a lot of money over here.
They started sending us screenshots. I seen the six digits. I was like, what do we need to do to start collecting? We got that check this time of year.
Yeah, like right before the holidays.
Right before Christmas.
We was filling out all this paperwork to get this. Man, we didn't really believe it yet.
Yeah.
That motherfucking check came in the mailbox, and I opened that shit. When I said Christmas was Christmas. Because it was like, oh, it was. You know what? It was hard. It was fucking 2006 or 2007
when the recession.
The recession was kicking in. Fucked up out here.
And then at that time, we had rental properties and everybody stopped paying their rent. So we was fucked.
But that kind of check came through at the right moment.
Boy.
That's what made me begin to hold on to all of my records now.
Like, made sense then.
If I would have gave away Marry Me, I mean, again, look, Marry Me is the biggest streaming record we've ever had in our entire career. This year alone, we probably
Marry Me put up numbers like major fucking
big. We had like 833 million streams this year on one platform. iTunes or Spotify or Raps. This is one platform. So the checks on that shit is like a gift. Like, it's literally a gift.
Exactly. I know you have.
I got one, and it's for, I got one for you and one for you. Okay. I'm going to go with you first. You being the business man you are, how did you separate the business from your marriage?
And
it's the times that it overlaps. When did you know, I got to be the husband?
It's bad because you got to realize if you're pushing for something in the business and in the personal world, you're A-OK. But in the business world, she's being resistant because she's a female. She don't like to listen, you know. And let's be honest. She's a girl. They don't want to listen to you. You tell them, listen, this is what you need to do in order for us to get here. I know what you want to do, but that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, believe it or not, even my bubblegum being the biggest money maker at that point in time, that was a forced record on her. We had to threaten her to give it to one of her female, I think we was going to give it to Gangsta Boo at the time.
Ooh.
Rest in peace to Gangsta Boo. You don't want it. We're going to give it to Gangsta Boo.
And I said, no, y'all not, because I wrote this.
So we knew that was me and Jacob York at the time. We was trying to corner her in a corner to get her to do the record. Because we already like, this fucking sound.
We're
tripping. Right. So she did it that day, and it immediately took off again. And that's when she started listening more. Like, that was the point where it was listening. But the conflicts are conflicts. When you're mad at the artist, you're mad at your girlfriend, your wife at that time. If that shit is bad in your marriage, it's bad in your music. There was no change. It was like, you pissed off over here, you pissed off over there. So, you know, luckily, again, like I said, we did some Europe, we did Germany, we were on tour, we toured forever. So it forced us to have to get over the bullshit, just being honest. Because, hey, such and such want to book you here, what you want to do it or not? Because she has this rule where you have to clear shows with her. You can't just put her on shows, you know?
Right.
So, you know, and I understand because you be out there, you deal with a lot of, some motherfuckers is crazy, some people cool, and, you know, you got to be, she got to be in her mood to perform and go do it at this point in time. So we running and we doing all these shows and we left mad. Shit, once we get out there, we back like glue because we don't know what the fuck they doing.
Right.
What the hell going on? We don't been to the point where they put you in a room and they name. But when you go to the show to go do your show, now they know Rashida was somewhere Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 9 out of 10, they got all that money on them from Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You going to do when you go in the hotel? You going to leave it in the hotel, right?
Right.
So they would go
the
in your room.
The promoter name.
They would go in your room
so
and
you
hit
go
you
to
for
the show.
Your bread.
Oh, wow.
For your money.
So it was all that shit going on. But see, we ain't play that game. Yeah. I was always the in the safe motherfucker.
Yeah. Right.
I was safe. Put the shit in the safe. Room ain't got a safe. You got to give me a room with a safe, or we got to change hotels.
Exactly.
So we learned that shit without getting hit because we heard a lot of other people. You know, we was hearing the stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So or either I would start putting the money in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't put more than $10,000. So we would see, we seen a, it was Washington Mutual or something like that.
Yeah.
We would always, in Citizens, we would pull over.
Yeah.
Go to the bank. It was like, let's go drop some of the money in the bank, $5,000 or $6,000 and see it. So we was kind of learning, and we learned we learned kind of that little spiel. And what else?
I mean, but over time, what we... It's, we still have our time because we are now, we of course music, but shit, we have so many other businesses. Yeah. And we, you know, so sometimes it's like with us, we disagree, but now we just kind of keep moving forward. We communicate a lot more now as it's we're harder. Older and be like, nigga, no, you got to hear the reason why I feel like I feel, you know, or then you be like, no, you need to understand. And we've matured to come to a common ground. In a lot of situations, sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
But you know, it just is what it is. I think the fact that we were such good friends,
yeah.
it really helps our relationship because I'd be like, nigga, I ain't. He'd be like, see, you remember that one time when you did that shit? And I'd be like, you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And she's stubborn. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah. Like, if Rashida does something, I'm gonna tell y'all right now. If Rashida do something, she did it because she wanted to.
That's right.
There's really not a lot of making Rashida do what you want her to do. Like, I'm just gonna be honest. You just
I
get
feel like I've grown to fucking her.
Yeah. It's like,
you know what I'm
she
saying?
Gotta like, wanna do it. Like, sometimes people will say stuff to me and thinking I'm the controller of Rashida. I'm like, you're gonna need to work that out with her. You know, I can agree or disagree, but she does what she want to do at this point. And you know, they started this boss bitch
thing, all this
moving up. They the ones in control now. We sit to the back.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mind it at all. Like I tell people, because again, I eat off her everything we've
That's
done
right.
anyway.
Right.
So you know, coming into the world of which would get us to reality TV is when they came to her, it was because she was the one bridging the gap when it wasn't no females in the music and the mixtapes. And we still spending the money. You know, we I would record all the albums and in the house, every last vocal, everything, place everything, get it all ready. Then I would bring somebody in to mix it. So we would learn how to make albums at. No. I swear, a whole album might have cost me $20,000.
Self-sufficient, like
$20,000. I mean, so, and we redid the paperwork because I'm like, wait a minute. Even though I'm spending the $20,000, I got to still shoot the video, pay for the hotel, pay for the room, pay for all the food. I got to bring everybody. So then I was like, we got to structure the deal different because I got to eat 20%. Don't cut it.
Right. Yeah.
We in Germany. We here. We doing this. The flights is. So that's when we went into a 50-50 partnership.
Yeah.
And so at now that we're point, label 50-50.
So we 50-50.
Even though I'm an artist, but we just busted everything down.
Yeah. And it just made it easier because now I don't have to. You don't even want to argue no more. Listen, you don't want to explain
you
shit.
Got it?
Yeah. Do you want to go get this 50-60?
Well,
yes or no?
Yeah, no.
You know, I'm going to be honest, there's a lot more no's than yes. But there's a lot more leverage when it makes sense for both parties. And that's how we began. Because people always ask, how the fuck y'all work the money out, though? And what y'all do with this? And how y'all? And it's like, really, if you think about it, it's coming into the same household.
Right.
She's doing what she want to do with it.
Right.
Come on.
I'm doing what I want to do with mine.
Right.
We both happy doing what we want to do. Our kids are straight. We doing what we need to do for the kids. What is it to complain about at this point?
Right.
So it really works well when you figure out, because money, if I kept at an artist 6% or 20%, I mean, think about it. 20%. You make $100,000, she get $20,000. But she looking like, I'm the motherfucker on the stage.
Right. I want all the shit.
I got to dress. I got to buy my outfits. I got to do the hair. So then you got these arguments, and it just comes to, you know what? Let the label pay for all the bullshit, and after that, we can do our thing. And that's when it got real fun. Like, again, it got back fun.
Right.
You know, and then people ask me about Love and Hip Hop because I'm low key. I don't want to be here. And I just remember talking to Mona at the time coming into Love and Hip Hop, and it was like, well, Rashida, what make you different?
No, the Mona said, well, Rashida, what makes you any different from any other, you know, pretty girl in Atlanta? I said, well, I've been married 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and my situation is different because I'm the rapper.
Right.
You know, everybody else who was, you know, coming to the show or doing whatever they was doing, they was all the girlfriend. Mm. Nobody was married. Mm. They was all the girlfriends of the nigga who rap or does production.
Or he had two girls
or whatever. Or he
whatever.
Got two, three bitches, you know, or whatever. And she was like, what? You're married?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. She was like, where are your husband? I was like, outside in the parking lot. You know, and she was like, bring him in here. Tell him to come in right now. I go out to the car and I'm like, hey, baby, listen. You're going to have to come up inside. They want to meet you.
Yeah.
Kirk like, no. I don't want to be on no TV.
Yeah.
I don't want to do. I was like, this is probably going to be the yes or no.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if you going
right.
to come in here, because this is what makes us different from everybody else.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And once he got inside and they started talking, and that was the birth of
I was nervous as hell, yeah. I was like, Mona, because Mona managed Missy at the time, Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
It was
G-Unit, 50 Cent. It was Violator.
Yeah, Violator.
And yep. I'm like, I got to meet Mona? Like, Mona? No. Not going to happen. Like, I was like, no. You could tell her I'm doing something. We argued outside for a minute. And I was like... I remember you saying that. You was like, if you don't do it, they're not going to do the deal. If you don't come inside, you're going to make me look like I'm telling her some bullshit.
Right.
So I went inside to meet her, and, you know, she was asking me all these questions and shit, and I'm just like, you know, because at 10 years, so basically you got to put this in perspective at the time.
Mm-hmm. As a female rapper, right? You couldn't have no nigga.
You couldn't have
right.
no nigga.
Right.
You know, so you married for 16 years?
Yeah, 16.
Okay, so just imagine 10 of your 16 years, nobody know you married.
Oh, hell.
She's
hell.
A solo freak.
Right.
So nobody really, if you know me,
you know
right, right. We never promoted that, right?
Right.
So they're sitting here like, man, you've been married to her for 10 years and I never fucking heard about you. Because we were trying to get Missy to do this record, and it's like, I never heard about you. Like, who are you? Like, they just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just so chill. I'm like, whatever she want to do, you know, I don't give a fuck.
It's like,
and that was the start of it. It was like, man, so yeah, we want to sign y'all up. We don't need to go no further. Who's your lawyer? And da 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 da. And we get in the car, I was like, now how the fuck I'm going to get out of this?
We in it now. We in it now.
Shit. Fucked your life up.
Why you didn't want to do it? What was the, what was the problem at first?
He don't want to be on TV.
I got a lot of people in jail at the point in time. It's this hardcore shit going on, and you know, TV was soft. Like, it wasn't for the dude. It was for the artist. Like, I'm not a rapper, so I didn't even understand the terms of becoming a... I'm like, what the fuck do I do? I'm a label. What am I going to do on TV?
Yes.
I wasn't thinking of it in the sense of what you can do. But as I began to talk to people and begin to talk, and we start thinking, well, we do this. We do got the online.
Right.
We start getting it, and they start giving us... That was Mona sitting you down, too. I'm not going to act like she didn't sit you down and say, well, this would be your perks.
Ooh.
If you did this and this and this.
Yeah.
You know, she already heard this question, the question of how we live like we live. She was like, well, what do y'all do? Like, how do y'all have homes? And, you know, when they came to our house, they was already asking a lot of questions. And I was, like, scared for them to, I don't know, it's something about people knowing where you live at. So I had that feeling
time
at first.
Move.
Cause so what we did was we made a TV. We still got a TV house. We would take them all to where we film at, and we still got those houses we film at, and we live two or three different other places. But you know, it really taught me a lot. Like the minute 5 episodes in, we had to learn too. We had to learn this game too, because the TV was becoming the music industry.
And that's what I was gonna say too.
Real quick.
I was gonna say we kind of transcended because you know we owned the studio. So remember, everything was ADATs and D88s and fucking 2-inch reels. Man. And then you see how that game changed into digital,
digital
and Pro Tools and everything.
Yeah,
and then the music industry changed. You was busting out CDs and shit out your trunk too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, there's no more CDs. Niggas is download. Wait a minute, they're doing it illegally. Oh. Now they made it legal, so you don't need these CDs no more.
Yeah.
We was printing up two inch. We was printing up vinyls, 12 inches, and all that type of stuff. So, you know, to have transcended through all of that different stuff, and then you in this industry where you feel like music ain't going nowhere, it's here, it's this, and then
it's
you start seeing it starts a shift, and we learned even from that studio shift, like. Always be prepared for the next. And that's one thing he always used to, you know, put into me too. He used to be like, you know, we got to be able to spread our wings. Like when we saw that reality TV was starting to become something.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we noticed, I think that other people just didn't pay attention to, is how that opportunity, if you do it right, you can really, really make something out of, you know, you can really
opportunity.
Eat for real. Like, you know, do the right shit.
You know what you got? You got a lot of, I tell this all the time, too. Rashida would always listen to, I don't know all the white artists or what they were, but she always listened to this other kind of music, and it used to drive me crazy. And she would watch TV. I think it was Brody and
I used to watch Hills, all the little white and, shows and shit all the time.
You know, then it was like Sex and the City. I'm talking about early. This is back, way right. back, 20-some years ago. The Sarah Jessica Parker lady and then the Kardashians. Early Kardashians. Yeah. When the daddy, the early Kardashians.
Yeah.
They are the ones who, just before people were even into them, you were watching them and we were just looking at certain things and I noticed things they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it made me kind of veer into, wait a minute, we could put the company on TV.
Exactly.
I'm bossy at the time. Yep. And, you know, and we went through some bullshit, but by episode 5 of the first season of Love & Hip Hop,
It was like a fucking light bulb just went off.
The mic was
like,
coming.
Hold on. We finna have to change this shit up.
We was trying to be us, like Kirk and Rashida.
Yeah. Right.
And then they got all these Stevie J at the point in time with the rat faces and this dude doing this and Mama D with the kingdoms and the kingdom. And we just Kirk and Rashida and we trying to figure out, wait a minute, we not really popping on here. Because it go by if you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we immediately, by episode 5, we changed shit up immediately. And then we brung the bullshit into play and started headed down the lane of what shit that was really happening.
It was
we started
shit that
exposing
was going
it.
On, yeah. But we started exposing it because we were like, we ain't going to put that shit on.
Yeah, she might, but while we talking, she said some slick shit that she wasn't supposed to say on camera.
Yeah.
So then I hit her back with some slick shit I wasn't going to say.
Right.
And then now we really started, glad on camera. Oh, God. And we got to argue when we get home, but no, you says you disrespected me on the, and then that's how, and we realized it once we watched it back, the disrespectful, crazy, knucklehead, dumb shit was the shit that started
like,
going.
They like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that all give me a kiss and smooch, smooch, smooch. Dead all that shit. That is not what they're here for. Like, when you put some shit up in the comment, go the bullshit come in, that is the reason why everybody is on your shit putting the bullshit comment. They come for the bullshit.
For the bullshit. Right.
If you think you're going to get in this shit just for the smooth and the good, just because who you think you are or was, that ain't going to make you no money.
Mm-hmm.
By episode 2, and millions ain't never try to book me. By episode season, excuse me, by season 3, I was turning down bookings, and I still turn bookings down to this day. I probably got every biggest podcast you can think about, and they pay.
Right.
I don't do it because you know what they want? They want to get you, and they want to ask you the dumb shit on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't even know me enough to want to go down there. Like, I'm going to talk about it anyway, but I just feel like I'm not the guy that you could just fly in and put me in a room and then like say the wrong shit. I'm just not him, so I don't do a lot of them. But that's when they fuck with you. When you got the bullshit, that's when you begin to pop. And that's when I started making, I mean, shit, my salary is exactly the same as hers. And when we did get chances to get pay raises, we turned them down because you had to sign on to more cycles.
Yeah, because it's a record deal.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you take a raise, they want more
cycles.
You take more money, they want more of you. After a while, you got to break that shit down and
freedom.
Be like, now, what you do is, and this is what we sat down and we realized, yo, we not worried about the giving us a raise. Let's take our businesses and try to get them on this platform as many times as we can.
Yeah.
Then that way, that money is all of our money for us to, you know, build, grow, and do what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, I had my website. We started, it initially was first called imbossy.com, and it changed to press. But 14 years ago is when we started. We've been on Love & Hip Hop for
12 years,
right?
It's the 12th season, but it's the 13th season because they do two in a year now.
Right.
Yeah.
So
the 13th season.
When we started that website, and then when I got on the show and was able to highlight that shit, when I tell you, fucking crashed the site. The server. Everything. Once we saw that, we was like, nigga, it's on.
No, we crashed. We was at GoDaddy.
We was on GoDaddy.
We crashed GoDaddy.
Yeah, that's
a server with a certain amount of companies.
And this is Love & Hip Hop.
It's like, you got
8
to get
million
off
niggas
this.
Every Monday night.
Exactly.
It's like the biggest thing ever. Us getting into it, not having a clue
yeah,
that,
yeah.
number one, the show was going to be that big.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
But once we kind of saw how that was going, then we just said, okay, now we can rock this shit and maneuver it like
but
we need.
But that one crash.
But it comes with a cost. Everything does.
But hold up. This was important, too, because when they exposed iMbossy.com, that shit was like, ding, 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 ding. And she just turned to, like, you know how, like, ding, ding,
yeah.
Ding. Then it was like, ding, 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 ding. Then it was like, boom. At the end of it, it just stopped. And I'm like, something happened. They shut us down. What we doing? We couldn't figure out what was going on. So we calling them and calling. It's like, you know, you crashed the entire site.
Damn.
You had, at that point in time, I think 200 and something thousand went at one time. And it crashed their site. So they built us our own server. It cost a lot of money at that point in time. But it took us 2 weeks to get back up, and we were so nervous because we was like, damn, is people still
going
to come to
the
website? Man, I think we probably did like $2, $3 million that first year out of our dining room. Dining room. So now, I never gave a fuck who was getting paid the most money on the show.
Yeah.
I started looking at these niggas like, y'all dumb, man. Excuse my language. They know I did. We talk. Y'all sitting here just doing a show.
Yeah.
We sitting here promoting businesses.
Come on.
And that's when it changed for us. It was like more, you know, and they recognized real early that we were more business orientated. But, you know, you got to bring the bullshit with you, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good for us when we're not getting along because that's what people want to see. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you know, but, I mean, I've done it for a long time. I'm in a good place. I've been talked about long enough, and I just be like, you know, I'm kind of at that. I can't keep doing that.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So it's either our way at this point or no way. You get what I'm saying? I'm going to be honest with you. I've COD'd everything I wanted to COD. I own enough shit. If I fuck it up, I'm the dummy.
I'm old now.
I feel like at this point we're here to, we can be us. So you got to either love us for us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we good.
Exactly.
So that's where Boss Moves comes in. Boss Moves is still under Paramount, which is Love and Hip Hop is under Paramount. And that's our own distribution deal to put out the things we like to put out. Mm-hmm. And our family is fucking crazy too. Like, you know, kids are fucking crazy. Like, we want to show what's really going on in our household and what we got to do within us. Getting together to have a family photo shoot with the 7 kids and the 7 grandkids and the boyfriends that come to my daughter and so much other shit going on. You can't display that on a Love and Hip Hop platform because there's so many other characters on there, which, again, the franchise is amazing. It's done groundbreaking things for us. Yeah. But
when you speak of them Boss Moves, man, can y'all talk about that real estate, man?
Oh, yeah. So.
Real estate.
Going international with it.
You know Absolutely. What? You can get into it too with it.
Well, one thing that we learned from being on Love and Hip Hop was we always said, and this was after season one, we weren't even really making no money like that when the show first started, you know. But we said, after the first season, we said, okay, we're going to make sure that we buy something or we're securing something.
Yeah.
Because as you have to put your life out here for niggas to look at and all that type of stuff, eventually, you know, stuff be over. It ain't gonna be on all forever.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We want to be able to leave out of the situation knowing that we have elevated, knowing that we have done shit to set ourselves up. We don't need no bills if we can prevent that, back when we was talking about it. Mm-hmm. So we started buying, I think, season two. We bought like a five acre lot, right? After that, the following year, we bought another 5-some acre lot.
7 acres with a house
on it.
That's connected to
that 5 acre lot. You know, and then we just started buying different stuff like all over from, we have a building on 14th Street. We got, Frost Bistro. We got all these
Walker
different.
Street.
We got Walker Street.
Yeah.
We got property in the, like, Buckhead, Bahamas, different
got
stuff.
In the city in the on city. 14th Street.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
like,
we just put ourselves on like a plan, and I would tell people all the time because people always be like, you know, this Love and Hip Hop bullshit. Da, da, da. I said, see, what y'all got to understand is this. Y'all don't understand business, and you go into shit with a plan.
Yeah.
Because y'all just thinking, oh, I want to do this and turn up. Nah, my nigga, it's called discipline, bro. Mm-hmm. It's called understanding, like, okay, if you're getting the opportunity, hey, now nigga in here back when Love and Hip Hop first started could afford a commercial on fucking VH1 during the hours of Love and Hip Hop. That's a $300 million business for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So imagine the advertising dollars that you would have to pay. And they still killing it. But for that to be free for you, my nigga, focus. Stop tricking off and doing bullshit with your money and do something with it. And that was the realness. When I tell you, sit down with a pen and paper, and we still do that to this day. Like, ain't no digital. Nigga, sit down. We're going to write down these plans. And we're
going to
do it.
I got the blueprint ever, because we would always put together what we wanted the business to be, what we wanted to do this year, what we wanted to do. Like, this year, what did we buy? Like, we're working on two houses right now. And we've been doing houses. That's not new.
Yeah, we
so the real estate was a discovery of being... Real estate to me came as a discovery because we were in there, you know, playing around in the streets at the point in time. I had a crib in Decatur. Stone Mountain. And at that point in time, I think... I don't know if anybody knew. You know, damn, you ain't even in the camp. You know JoJo, though, right?
Yeah.
So me and JoJo stayed. Our houses, he was in Hidden Hills and I was in Biffle Down. We like, houses were backed up together.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point in time, we like young with houses and shit. But then it was like shit started happening and people was getting in trouble and shit. And I'm like, damn, I live right through the bushes. I need to sell this motherfucker, right? So... I mean, JoJo's cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Cool. He never, he kept it all the way 100. Never, we never had no issues or nothing. Yeah. But I wind up giving the crib to my homeboy because I didn't know how to sell it. Because I'm thinking like apartments, you just leave it in, you know, like what you do. I didn't know none of the knowledge.
Right.
It was non-qualifying loan assumptions at that point. You just had to get the money down that they had in it.
And
a certain loan. So I didn't know how to get out of the loan.
Yeah.
So I just gave it to my friend, let him put it in his name. Like, you can have it.
Yeah.
I just need it out my name. Because if they ever come here, I don't want them fucking with me.
Exactly.
So he was like, it was like years later. He was like, yo, you only owe $8,000 on the house. Why did you give it to me, right? I didn't know. He wound up selling the house, getting like $100,000 or something, right?
Yeah.
Took that, bought another one, and then he bought another one.
Yeah.
So he always was like, yo, you the one who started me. Rest in peace to Amp. You know. And I had helped him start. Like, he had a window cleaning company. He was the guy doing all of these big ass buildings hanging on the thing. But what was an early advancement for me at that time is anytime I had got in any kind of trouble, ruts or anything, like, damn, my money ain't free, he would always do whatever I needed because I funded his whole company. He was such a great guy to give back.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, I sold that house for this. Look what I did with it. That's how I bought this and this and this. Mm-hmm. So when I was getting ready to get rid of another house, he was like, let me show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we listed, he get the real estate agent, we put the house up. It sold immediately, 2 weeks. So now we go to close and it was in her name.
Yeah.
So she get the check for like 80-something. So now we start to realize, wait, don't just leave it like an apartment.
Exactly.
And I'm like, we standing here damn near for free because we stay here 2 years and we got all that back plus some extra.
Exactly.
And that's how I start learning the real estate. And that was the goal. Like, man, I got a house. We stayed in damn near a year and a half and made $700,000.
Shit.
So it's like once you kind of get to the money, it's easy to get
to make the money.
When you ain't getting it, that shit seems like it will never happen. It's that is a very true thing when they say money make money.
Exactly.
It's so true. It's it's
that
crazy.
It's real.
They don't want to give you shit. They don't want to lend you nothing.
Right.
Like when I wanted to buy the Frost Bistro, the way the lender was on that deal, I got to stay with the mortgage company for 10 years. The rate is going to be fixed for about 7 to 8 years. And whatever it was, it took 10 years before I can sell it. Man, I looked at it. I was like, I tell you what, me, you, and the company can just buy this motherfucker.
Exactly.
We can all chip in, and we'll put back money as we get it. And that's how we start buying our commercial real estate.
Yeah.
And that was really all she wrote, man. I never, you know, like, they'll give you anything now. But even our companies, like, we got online stores and stuff like that. But if you got a POS system, there's always a merchant. If you look in your shit, they'll say, hey, we'll give you non-doc. You can get $700,000, $800,000 right out your phone in minutes because of your sales that you've been doing for so many years. So it's so many ways. PayPal would give us $300,000-$400,000.
Shit, we might take $100,000 from PayPal and a couple hundred from ourselves and be like, okay, let's go buy this.
Go buy this. Yeah. And you're only paying them back. They ask you, do you want to pay back 5%, 10%, 25%? We would pay back 25%. Pay that one off. Go get another one. Buy something else. And it started being more fun than anything else we were doing. I'm going to be honest. And that's what We're doing two right now, right. Literally. For real. Yeah. So it's like that is the best thing we've ever done. The real estate has made us the most money.
Yeah.
Music has gave us the most residual money forever. You know, we got that residual.
We call music our 401k.
Yeah.
That's our pension. That's our retirement. Yeah. We had that for, you know, forever.
Ever.
Yeah. And then all the other things that we do, you know.
A lot. Which is a whole lot. Yeah, the deal. And now we're doing the movies and the... You know, we got Seed of the Game coming, a documentary. It's prior to the Paid in Full. It's actually the guy who they looked up to.
Okay.
It's a doo-wop story. And then after that, we're doing the D-Lo thing with the start of everything.
Kind of like this story slash a lot of other stuff.
I was lucky enough. I got the footage.
Ooh.
From 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
I got all the shit. All the footage. He was a camera nigga.
I lent a little bit to Freaknik, you know. Same system, you know, they doing it. My friends is doing it. We was just helping them with certain, because it's hard to capture certain things, and it's like, I'm not going to use that. Y'all can get that, but I was lucky enough, and I'm talking about early artists, before they were groups, when they turned to groups, why they were groups, I got it.
Damn.
All.
Wow.
So they be like, well, let us drop it all over for you and give it.
No.
We can work that ourselves, and now we're starting to work on it and figure out what we want to use. Plus, on certain tapes, I was like, Rashida might be running around in her panties.
Right.
For real.
It was a whole tape, so it ain't like now, nigga. It was a TV, you know.
And I'm not watching every minute of this shit. So we got these things where you just put play in and you hit that shit and you can leave and the shit will dump the whole shit onto the hard drive.
Yeah.
And you come back and we just did that and we got it all over there. So now we got sections of stuff they started to put together. Then we'll start plugging in the interview. So we having fun right now with it. Just to be honest, it's more fun.
Yeah. I got one more for Rashida and then you big guy. I'm gonna say a couple of names to you, Rashida.
Uh-huh.
You, of course.
Uh-huh.
I say Mia X.
Yes.
I say Gangsta Boo.
Yes.
Rest in peace. Lady of Rage. Yeah. Back then. And this just the south to the west. Like you're talking about up north.
Right.
And then I'm going to say these names to you, too. I'm going to say Glorilla. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Sexy Red. Yeah. One I done there.
Lotto.
Ice Spice. Uh-huh. Lotto. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between the first five that I said with y'all? Then these five I just said, the later five. What would you say the difference in y'all's music, y'all persona, y'all style, what you stood for that's different than what they stand for right now? If there's any difference.
Right. Oh, there's differences, but there's similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll say is, like, when I think of the females from back in the day, like from me coming up in the game and all of that, like, We didn't have social media. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have computers. Shit. Yeah. Niggas ain't had computers. Niggas ain't had phones.
Right.
Like that, for real. You know what I'm saying? So it's like everything you did was really out of the mud.
Mm.
Every fan, every show, every single thing that you did was the truth. It wasn't, let me do this video and hit this button and push it out there and all these people gonna see it. No, nigga, I gotta drive to Barnwell, South Carolina. I gotta drive to this city in North Carolina. We had to drive to these places and really put in the work.
Yeah.
And that's where real artist development come in, because you put right there, if you was able to even gain enough legs for niggas to even want you there. You know, then on top of that, when it came to us from back in the day, being that it was not a female, you know, industry like that, you had to prove yourself. You had, as far as me, keep in mind, I was reigned as the queen of crunk.
Right.
So I got niggas like Lil Jon. I'm opening up for them niggas.
Yeah.
So I got to come with it. Yeah. And I got to be remembered. People got to be like, that girl did that. You know, and I feel like, from all the years of working with the Gangsta Boos and the Crime Mobs and all the little groups, you know, everybody had to go through that whole phase of, like, really getting on stage, really knowing how to perform, really knowing how to, you know, do all of those type of things. I think nowadays it's a lot easier for the ladies. And when it's a lot easier, you'll take that easier route.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Which is nothing wrong with that. But I just feel like that's a lot of the the difference. Gotcha. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you ain't really got to put that work in like that for real. You know what I'm saying? And for the artists who really had to put that work in, like I tell him, like, to this day, it's like, one thing, not a person, a hater, a nigga on a comment, somebody from, they can't take away what the fuck I know I can do.
Damn right.
Because I've lived that. Absolutely. I've done this. Right. I know. Like, people always, you need to do music, you need to do, I'd be like, I'll end up doing it when I get ready. I've been able to earn that. That's you know right. what I'm saying? Out of the trenches of this game.
That's right.
So, you know, one thing I will say about the girls nowadays is, let me rewind it back. I'm going to come back to that. One thing he taught me was, always think forward moving when it comes to like being an artist.
Yeah.
You know, you can't stay stuck. Mm-hmm. And I would say that to the females now is like, yeah, you might have a hot song now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what you want out of this? Most of them, I want to do this. I want to be famous. I want to do that. Okay, well, that means you got to put in some real fucking work. Are you going to really want to do that? Or are you cool with that one song? Because now songs burn so goddamn quick.
Right?
You might get that little 25,000, 30, 40, 50,000, whatever you're getting. And then that shit gone, baby. And then you done had some kids and shit. And you trying to figure out how to pay your bills if you ain't got no nigga who want to act right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, the things I would say to these girls now.
Act right.
No, it's the truth.
No, I'm just laughing.
The things to the girls now is like, think about where you want to be in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, not the now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think that's the difference. Huh?
Absolutely.
You're right. No, you're right.
Yeah. I would say that.
Kurt, you said for 10 years they didn't even know that y'all was married. So how the hell did you keep your marriage together? You think that's my goddamn wife out there?
No.
That nigga used to be like, oh, you want to talk to Rashida? Go on over there and see what she's talking about.
Listen, I stood out the way. I was not never the cock blocking dude. She cute. Yeah, she is cute. Do she be hollering? I said, sometimes. You know, like I remember one time we was in like Oklahoma.
Oh,
remember that?
God.
It was this one dude. He was doing his thing, whatever. He was like, yo, what's up with Shorty? Like, she like, what the shits? I was like, I seen him talk to one dude before, but that motherfucker threw so much money on the stage.
I mean, she had no choice. That nigga was throwing 50. And then I'm looking at Kirk, I'm like, get that shit up.
I ain't even gonna go get out the manager, right? When she picked up two and said, they're hundreds,
that
was dollars.
Yeah.
Oh man, I picked up like 50. But it was people jumping up off the stage.
Yeah, there people was coming off the stage.
I got
crazy.
5,500.
On top of that booking fee.
You took our ass back to the hotel, you took our ass home. It was like, I just lay out the way.
I will say this, you know. The funny thing to me is when I look at the game now, it's all, everything is just the evolution.
Yeah.
It's the same shit, just dissected.
Yeah, different lingo.
Exactly. And the good thing is, because at one point in time, then you had Kim and Foxy and all the different females out here and Bratz and everybody doing their thing. Mm. And then it kind of simmered, and then it emerged, and it simmered. And it's just back up on the ups.
Yeah.
But the difference that I'm hoping can happen is we just need to really solidify some real deal artists, female artists that we can know. You know, I mean, of course we've had Nicki, you know, who sustained for a long time.
Right.
And
Cardi.
Cardi.
Yeah.
And all of that. But it's like, you know, you want those artists like, where, not to say it like this, y'all, don't. Please don't get it twisted, but okay, where's your female who's reigned like Jay-Z?
Right.
Where's your reigning, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what we want.
It's like
we need
a microwave
our reign.
Culture with the females.
Exactly.
They warm up and they cool.
Right. Yeah. You know, so it's like I look at it and, you know, kind of like in that realm. Like,
I think we're way away from a Jay-Z female for sure.
No,
but,
see, that's why I said.
But we got
I'm not
Nicki.
Talking about
yeah.
it. I'm talking
Nicki
about
close.
The
it's,
longevity
it's,
of somebody who consistent,
I
who
mean,
really,
wait,
you know what I'm saying?
What about Queen Latifah?
Wait, when I say Jay-Z, look,
no, she counts, of course.
Money, not Nicki is huge. Like, look at her followers. Cardi B is huge. Look at her. I don't mean just that. I mean
But that's like, business outside. CJ didn't get all that from rap. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, his persona is like, I mean, when it's like J&B just bought a $150 million crib here and they don't stay. I mean, like, I think we are long.
I don't. Optimistic Gemini crazy. I'd be like, all right, babe, so for us to get this building,
right?
Yeah.
We gonna need the such and such. He'd be like, what you talking about? I'd be like, listen.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I'm the one who think crazy. Brain. I'd be like, hey, if we fall short and we got $500 million, nigga, we lit.
Out of my brain.
But that's what I was trying to say. I wasn't meaning it like that, but I'm like, we have to develop our, you know, our
absolutely. And that goes for the black community. That goes for the black community, period. Not just
you know what I'm
everybody.
Saying? Exactly.
881 million views.
Approaching.
That's wait a minute. That's the last.
That's 365.
Okay.
In the last year. So when everybody talk about why she's not putting out music, I mean,
she doesn't have to.
Right.
This
she doesn't
is YouTube.
Have to.
She don't.
So in the last 365.
I'm a rapper.
For the record, I just want y'all to know we're 120 million away from another billion plays
exactly.
in one place. So
shit.
When I talk business, I don't. They can see it versus just you know you can just see the stats and it's like you got the hottest motherfuckers not doing a billion in a year
right.
sometimes. So
right.
I don't really be caring about it like I used to because it's like the shit that we got from back in the days do more than the current.
Right.
So that's right. that's just the real shit. Yeah. On it. And it's like you can show it though,
exactly.
And that's why I say I hope my kids never sell it.
Come on,
because. They're gonna short. They're gonna hurt themselves by doing it. You know,
we ain't
so,
never lied.
That's right. Yeah. So
folks need to tap in with these businesses. Mm-hmm. If folks need to tap in with these businesses, mm-hmm. which ones do y'all want them to be able to contact y'all directly
all
on?
FreshATL.com.
Yes.
Number one, that's Rashida Fashion.
Okay.
Yes,
Fresh,
that's the website.
296 14th Street, the physical store.
That's the physical store.
Mm-hmm. 281 Peter Street, Forest Bistro.
And
you know,
bar.
Breakfast and brunch, the best, some of the best shit around.
Open 6 days
honest.
A week.
Best.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
The vibe is up.
Yeah.
It's right around the corner, y'all.
Yeah. And, we got, and then other than that, we got Boss Moves. We got that's coming up.
Which is on Philo, which is a streaming platform. And we completed season two. We'll be gearing
season
up for season three. And Love & Hip Hop, of course, actually comes back on in January.
January 9th.
Yep, January 9th. And we're working on Seed of the Game documentary, mm-hmm. which is under our own production company.
Yeah.
And then we'll also come with the D-Lo story, which
yeah,
is
yeah.
how
and
all
soon after that, we'll probably have the whole Frost family, like the whole, just the squad.
Mm.
We got one more cycle in here with this other deal. We can't really compete against ourselves. So
yeah.
I'm anxious to get into the family dynamic after that because they're the ones who drive us really crazy in
right.
real life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they're like lit as fuck. Like, we're the old guys.
We
and
the
they're
old
like,
niggas. So yeah. just imagine how late they are and we the old
yeah,
niggas.
We the, like, yeah. Now, all their friends are like, y'all parents are cool as hell.
Listen, now normally, like, if somebody be like, man, it's my mom's birthday and my dad's birthday, we gotta go to their party. Oh my God, I don't even wanna go. Niggas, look, my kids' friends be calling like, hey,
can we
it's
come?
Your mama's birthday? It's your
please.
Can we come?
Yeah, it's different.
That shit be turnt.
It's like all
which
the kids,
cool.
they all want to come to. It's different. They be like,
yeah. All the grandkids always want to be yeah. in our house.
I don't blame yeah. them. I don't blame them. Appreciate y'all for y'all time as yeah. always,
thank
man.
You.
Y'all welcome. Whatever y'all need from us, we here for it.
You got to call yeah. them the power couple for Dre jump us on.
Oh, yeah. Dre don't pop up.
They going to say power couple, then somebody's going to say something.
Well, they going to say somebody. They ain't no power couple.
This fan base we got.
They going to love y'all.
Yeah,
they love y'all.
It's
appreciate
y'all
y'all always.
Yeah. Just know that
deserve.
There's no real couple if you ain't been through.
Yeah, you got to go through stuff. People always want to think, and you know, that's nothing on the relationship side, you know. And I'm the guy who'd be like, how long you been? I love the 16 years.
Yeah.
You know, how long?
Mm-hmm.
You?
Who?
You?
You ain't been in
this
situation.
You single? What you doing?
Nah.
This is a dog.
Okay,
so
you're
the
dog.
You're the
attorney.
You're the dog off the damn chain.
And guess what? It's good when you know it. But seriously, I always say it. No, because people be like, duh, duh, duh. I'm like, how long you been with you got a boyfriend? What you got? You got a husband? I mean, I've been dating a guy for a couple of months. You made it to a year yet? 2 years? 3, 4, 5? I mean, we've been married 24. So you telling me you don't know nobody who had 8? So y'all had a perfect relationship for 5 years, 10 years,
right.
15, 20? I mean, come on.
That don't happen.
shit's gonna happen. And bro, and if something happened, you know, y'all, if you say you don't want your shit to be tested, then you the fool. So you're gonna wanna know, you're gonna wanna go through your ups, your downs. And I'm not gonna tell you should go through them. You might not have to, but shit, from what I see,
I don't know, a couple who ain't.
Where?
You know what I'm saying? In some kind of way. You know,
it's worth it at the end of the day, sticking together, because at the end of the day, you don't wanna do it with nobody else.
Yeah, you gotta go start the whole shit over and deal with somebody.
You know what I tell people too, especially people in long stem relationships. Sometimes you go through shit and it can do certain things to your relationship. Mm-hmm. It could definitely just end it, you know? But it also can
strengthen it,
help it grow, and your relationship go into another season that you didn't even see coming. Ooh. Because you done went through some shit to the point to where it opened your eyes up to some whole other level of damn, you know, we here now through this bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Right. This bullshit actually has allowed us to understand, grow, and really be able to blossom in all these different kind of ways that we didn't even know. Mm-hmm. So people, they always want to talk the shit, but what they don't know is, like, unless you've been through something, then, you know, you don't know how bad I, you know, how much I suffered or how much he suffered or any of that type of stuff. Right. All y'all see is, I could never. Never say never, bitch. That's what I tell I tell a motherfucker all the time. Never say never.
Exactly. Right.
You know?
But then my question is the reality. I'm talking about the real reality of y'all's life, though, man, in a relationship. Trying to get people to understand that, because on Instagram, nobody cares about what it really takes to have a strong marriage.
And I don't try to explain it to them.
Okay, then. Okay.
Because guess what? You're going to just keep seeing us and keep seeing us, and they're going to wonder and let them wonder.
But what advice would y'all give to somebody? Because, see, my thing is their vision of it is skewed. They think the night is shining on
If you think that your relationship is going to be peaches and cream, like, that's, I mean, there's a lot of mature women out here, and there's a lot of people. I mean, let's just use a hustler for number one. I mean, and a lot of people can relate. A hustler usually has a couple of girls, right?
Yeah.
All right, so it's kind of known. If you're like a rapper, you usually got a couple of what?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you're in this game and your ball player, he's going to have X, Y, and Z, right? So they know that that type of life come with these type of circumstances, right? And they be like, well, as long as he paying my bills, I don't give a fuck. I got this kind of car, da-da-da. Right. And some be like, nah, hell, I ain't gonna deal with it. But when you're really there in the moment, and if you sat there and you had to deal with that one person and they had to only deal with you, is that even possible? Because a lot of people found out during COVID that they don't even like their girls or their boyfriends or their husband. It was the most divorce ever, right?
Damn.
So you got to really be around. They couldn't go around their other person and whatever was going on. So it really woke the world up to, like, it's been shit going on. And guess what? We allowed y'all to see ours, because we had to allow that camera to be there.
Was that painful?
It was very painful. And then, like I said, if I wouldn't have, I tell people all the time, my ass was ready so much time and spending so much time building her as an artist and learn how to take criticism and doing shit. Yeah. I never thought about myself. Mm. And when that damn gun was turned pointing at me and the barrel was cocked and they were shooting at me, I could have been the dude up on the building ready to jump, because social media is brutal. You know, they are brutal, but you know, you really live and you learn. And then it turned to be like, man, you know, you really helped me and my wife make it through, and thank you. And it was all kind, every city we winning, there was so many people like just thanking us for putting it out there, letting them see what it's like to not give up and fight for what you believe in and fight for the love, instead of just, because, you know, it's like, fuck, you did that shit, I ain't fucking with you, nigga, I'm on to the next. Fuck you. That's easy, even though the love is, you caring, but you like, nah, I ain't doing that. But it took a lot to go and build around it and figure out how to bring the family back together, because the last thing I ever picture myself let me say this, my kids, number one, very disappointing to be the father telling them what to do and you fuck up.
Ooh.
So now you got a, like a double-edged sword, because you telling us not to do X, Y, and Z and you did this.
Right.
So now what? You know what I'm saying? And then you got my little, at this point in time, Carter, about six. He looking on YouTube. Daddy. you put a Q-tip in my mouth and check the DNA to see if I was your son. Why you do that?
Right.
You gotta explain shit that you wasn't even thinking you could explain. Yeah. You know, and you really realize, you know, in the moment you win it, like, well, you a rapper, let me check. I'll fuck you. We gotta take y'all word. Let me see. You know what I'm saying? So we've been through all kind of shit. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we having fun for the cameras too. But it's not, it's really not fun because it's like, oh shit. What if it, you really, your heart beating like, but what if it ain't? Now you really like, man, I shouldn't have did that shit on camera. It's a lot of weird shit that happens, so.